Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests like Kendrick Perkins appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Antonio Davis, who is the former NBA Players Association president and played in the league for many, many years, was a colleague of mine at ESPN as well for a long time, will join us in a second. How great is Kendrick Perkins? Just in general, like, forget about what the messaging was, which is clearly important. And he's just... real is probably the best way to describe him, right? Like, he's not gonna mince words.
No, that's everything that you ever see from him. Whenever on TV, he doesn't change. He is the same person in every sense from what I've seen. And yeah, real is kind of the best way to do it, to call him.
Man, that was really loud. You were like so loud there. Were you like yelling into the microphone?
I mean, no, everything was very, very normal. Wow, I don't know why.
Loud, Laura. Was it loud on your end? Oh, maybe it was just me.
You're just tired of my voice at this point.
Oh, my God. There's no question about that. I mean, for the love, you know. But anyway. By the way, I was stoking the proverbial flames about you getting rid of Fast Track. Are Mason and Ireland still talking about that? Is that the problem?
Man, yeah. They're never going to stop. So what they did yesterday was they had a They made a joke. They called it Quick Street. They're like, we got a whole brand new thing. We're going to do something totally different than Fast Track, and we're calling it Quick Street. And then I went on afterwards and talked about it, and it was the exact same thing, but just called Quick Street, and it was just a joke played on Amanda and I. So it was funny. And now I'm getting just trolled relentlessly on Twitter.
Well, I mean, you have sat here and, you know, boasted about getting rid of Fast Track on this show. And what I would also say is that...
Where are you coming from?
I was actually... I mean, you did say it. Like, you were like, yeah, I got rid of it. But the... What I would say is I was willing to do something like I did on the morning show that one time where we spoofed it and we called it Fast Lane.
Right.
And I may consider bringing back Fast Lane because it's so innovative, you know?
It's so brand new. Make sure that you have something from the 70s as your music bed.
Well, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Fastlane.
Fastlane was very funny. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, they didn't fight for it. Is this what I've always said? They never fought for it. They didn't even try to keep it. Okay. They came on the call, and we were like, hey, we're getting rid of Fast Track. They're like, all right.
So,
okay, then it's gone.
Right. So they didn't complain about it. There's a lot of complaints about Major League Baseball, including yours, real quick. We'll get to that in a second because I want to do that on the other side at 11:30. But we want to talk to Antonio Davis, former NBA Players Association president, NBA player for a very long time. I mean, just a longtime veteran, former colleague of mine at ESPN. Antonio, thank you so much for making the time. I miss you, man. How you been? You good?
Oh, man, everybody's good, man. Thanks for having me on. Yeah.
Yeah, good. I'm glad.
This is the time.
I hope everyone's safe and healthy and all that stuff. It's very strange times, obviously, Antonio. And I want to talk to you about a number of different things. You were the Players Association president, so you've sat in Chris Paul's chair before, literally and figuratively. How would you best describe the challenge that he's facing at the moment with this NBA restart?
Well, you know, first of all, man, I've grown fond of Chris Paul during this time that he's kind of had that position, you know, just from a perspective of, you know, trying to listen to everybody and be engaged with everybody, which is hard. You know, you got guys that have, you know, a few years in the league to, you know, guys that have 15, 16 years in the league, and you're trying to make everybody happy, right? So I think from his perspective, you know, having that knowledge and support of, you know, making a decision for everybody is just kind of crucial, you know, and it's a hard thing to do, man. It's really hard to keep everybody happy. But I think if you put it all into perspective, when it comes down to, for instance, hey, should we play or not play, then I think, you know, other factors kind of come into play, and he has to make the best decision, and he has to make sure that, you know, he relays his decisions and his messages and all of that, you know, to the rest of the guys. And I think he's done a fantastic job at that.
So, I mean, you've done it. How hard is it to get 450 guys on the same page?
You know, in some ways it's impossible. You know, everybody's not going to be on the same page, as we can see in the media right now, you know, with Kyrie speaking out and Dwight Howard speaking out. And I think what I would say, you know, to all ball players right now is you have a voice. And no matter what it is, it's your right to have that voice. The only thing that I would ask is, hey, you know, go to the association, go to Chris Paul, go to whomever, talk about those different things. And as we, and as the message comes out from the players, because there's not many players talking right now, they're trying to figure some things out. As these messages come out, let's just make sure that we're collectively and collaboratively thinking about the best message to put out until we kind of get our bearings together. Because I think, you know, I read a quote from Michelle Roberts that was talking about, it's not whether or not the question to play or not to play. It's, you know, is it going to have an impact on what we, you know, are trying to support, you know, on what and who we are about. And that's a bigger question, you know, and again, Kyrie has that right to say, hey, no, we shouldn't play, because this is what I feel. And everybody, it may be 400 different opinions, but at the end of the day, you know, we got to have one message, because collectively, you know, we're one body.
How, and look, I who was your vice president when you were the president of the Players Association?
At the time, who was, okay, we had a couple guys kind of coming and going. I know I was under, I don't remember. I know there was maybe Jerome Williams was in there, Malik Rose.
Right, Malik Rose, I do remember. I remember Malik Rose.
To look that up, but yeah, I, you know, at that time when I was president, I know Billy Hunter came to me and we talked a lot about, you know, the state of the association and what was next and all of that. And at that time, it was like, hey, we need to find the next person to kind of come in as president and kind of take over this whole deal. So I really was just stepping in the interim, you know, because I was towards the end of my career, and just saying, hey, yeah, man, I'll step in here as a stable body person, because you can't be president without being a current player. So I feel like it was my duty to step in and help Billy through that process and try to understand what was going on, because I, as I exited out, you know, I still wanted to be a part of the Players Association and whatever else was going on, which I ultimately did. So yeah, it's a difficult one to get everybody on board, but it's part of your job. It's part of what you have to do.
So the reason I bring that up is because Kyrie is the vice president of the Players Association, newly appointed not that long ago. So what the reason I brought it up was because I wanted to know if you can recall maybe some inner conflict, right, between yourself and your vice president on something. I mean, I don't know if you faced anything this big. Clearly, no one has. So, but just on stuff that you deemed important at the time, was there some inner conflict that you dealt with, and how did you deal with that?
Well, I will say this. I've been through a couple of collective bargaining, going back and forth with that. I've been on several committees, you know, within the association. And I think, and we've had scenarios where guys were going out into the media and talking basically against everything that we were trying to put out as a message. And my thing was, hey, let's get on the phone and make sure we hear what these guys have to say. And even in our messaging, say like, hey, not everybody agrees to what's going on here, but again, we're collectively trying to come up with something that works for everybody. And that's kind of been our whole thing. And at some point, we pointed to, you know, at that time, kind of, you know, on the other side, you had them having gag orders and stuff, like, don't say nothing in the media or you're going to get fined, you know. And I know that there were times where we had to do that. Hey, if you say something in the media, it's not only going to affect everybody, but we're going to start pointing the finger at you as not being a part of us. So I think the biggest thing, you know, I, and again, I just felt like if Kyrie felt something like that, there should have been a conversation. Just like I'm saying, hey, you can still play the game and have an impact on what's going on in the world today. He still could have had his opinion and voiced it in a way where I'm sure Chris Paul and everybody else would have listened, but, you know, also put out a message that say, hey, we're collectively thinking about ways to tackle this situation, and just instead of saying, hey, we should play.
Right, because it would be important to present a united front, right? I think as a collective with the Players Association, not that you're going to, as you pointed out, you're never going to get 450 guys on the exact same page, but at least the leadership should be showing a united front. Is that fair to say?
Well, I mean, not just showing a united front, but having, you know, I think there's that balance between respectively saying, hey, Kyrie, you have a point. Tell us why you feel what you feel, because maybe that should be a part of our message. And if, for instance, he said, hey, I just feel like if we go back to playing, the spotlight is going to be taken off, you know, this movement and put on to us. And then a rebuttal to that could have been like, well, okay, well, why don't you start a committee to talk to the NBA about different ways that we can take that spotlight and put it back onto the movement and what we're trying to get done as an example. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that then says, hey, Kyrie, we still respect the fact that you have a different opinion or a different approach, but let's approach it together. Like, to me, that's that balance that has to always be there. I'm not saying he doesn't have a right to say what he wants to say and to have an opinion, but there has to be a way, because again, 400 and some guys have to live with what's going on right now, and it can affect everybody.
Antonio Davis joining us here again, longtime NBA player, played for, I believe, 13, is it 15 seasons? 15 seasons, Antonio?
13, yeah, I played 3 years overseas, man, before I went to the NBA.
Right.
A lot of people don't know that, but yeah, 16 years of professional basketball. I feel so blessed to have gone through that. NBA is, you know, it's great to me and for me.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to continue talking about, you know, everything NBA for sure.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure I got it right, because I didn't want to shortchange it, you know, in any way, Antonio. So former NBA Players Association president as well. So let me ask you, as someone who played in the league for, you know, well over a decade, right, and were the Players Association president, how do you feel personally about the position of Kyrie and Dwight? Like, do you believe that sitting out is a sound strategy?
You know what? Personally, I don't feel like that is a sound strategy. I can, again, understand it, but it's not one that I feel would benefit kind of in the long run. There's other ramifications of sitting out. You know, it's just that trickle-down effect of, hey, that allows the owners to open back up to CBA. You know, what will happen when that happens? You know, so we got to think about this as a whole, you know, and again, it's give us the platform, allow us something, you know, allow us an opportunity to put forth our messaging from that perspective. The other perspective is, now we're talking about the NBA, which holds, I want to say, a great majority of our African-American males from a capital perspective. They make, you know, top dollar right now. So to take that away from them, and take away their ability to go back into their communities and help thriving businesses, or help small businesses, or build communities, or bring about change as what's going on right now, that won't be very smart either. You know, you take away that economic power and that voice that they have. So I understand that from his position, you don't want to take away from what's going on right now and put that spotlight somewhere else. But I also say to him, embrace that power, embrace that spotlight. Once it's being put on you, then you can talk about the issues at hand. So I would have that conversation with him.
Gotcha. Two more quick questions with Antonio Davis, 16-year NBA vet, and of course, you know, NBA Players Association president. So, LeBron James, I know you made some comments recently this week. I know sometimes that stuff can get misconstrued and cut it in short sound bites or whatnot.
Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, you had the comment that was put out there was that you believe he needs to, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you're okay with him, you know, saying his piece on social media, but you feel like it would be in his best interest and the league's best interest if he vocalized those things as well. Do I have it right? If not, like how do you feel about LeBron James's position at this point, and what would be best for him and the league if he did moving forward?
Let me say this: I think LeBron has done a phenomenal job in you know, 95% of the cases where he's spoken up for whatever, right? He's done great in his hometown of Akron, Ohio, education. You can go on and on with the list of things that he's done. And I think he's been very intelligent and very, you know, with the collective thought about how he goes about saying what he says. For all of those reasons, the only thing I'm saying is say it more. Like, we got to drown out that noise of, you know, and I don't want to say it in a negative way, but if we keep hearing two different sides, you know, Kyrie saying we shouldn't play, LeBron saying we should, this guy saying we should, this guy say we shouldn't, then I just feel like the more that he talks, and I know he will talk from a very, you know, intelligent perspective, the more he talks, the less, you know, we will look like we're not, you know, collective in our thoughts, so we're not together on this subject. You know what I'm saying? So I guess I just was saying, hey, we want to hear more from him because he has a voice and because it's been a powerful voice, because he's had great messages, because he's done wonderful things in the community. His voice would drown out, you know, some of the other noise. That was my perspective, you know, on saying, hey, one way or another, just come out and talk about whatever. And then, but I also feel like it's a big responsibility to have that loud voice. So I also would say LeBron has to do that in his time. He has to do that when he's ready. And I know when he does, you have something very intelligent to say. Well, people will stop and listen, and I think it'll be a great thing.
Antonio Davis with us here. Antonio, last one for me here, and thank you again for all the time you've given us today. As a guy who played in the league, as you know, what would be your biggest, what do you think would be the biggest challenge for players going into the bubble campus environment? What would be at the top of your mind about in regards to just what challenges would you be facing?
That would have been the first thing I was talking about. Are we, if we're going to play, is it going to be safe? Does that mean my family can come in and out of the bubble? Does that mean that I'll be without my family for weeks, months at a time? What are all the protocols? Like, please explain to me what's going to happen, because you're asking me to come back to a situation, and I need to know and I need to trust, which I think players should do. If nothing else, when you hear Adam Silver talk about, you know, them taking the time and engaging with all these different health organizations and all these different people about protocol and picking why they picked out the place that they picked, and then going through and figuring out what's the best thing to do, you have to tip your hat to them. You have to be assured that they're taking everything into consideration and making the best decision for everybody. So as a player right now, I would have concerns, but I would also trust that my association, the Players Association, and the NBA is doing everything that they can to make sure that they minimize risk as much as possible, because that's all we really can do. This is new to us. This is the first time that this has happened, so nobody's going to be perfect at it, And there may be situations where, hey, somebody may catch something. But from what I'm hearing, they're doing as much as they can to make sure they take the people who have high risk out of the equation. They make sure that they're putting in protocols to keep everybody as safe as possible. So I think at the end of the day, if they say it's time to play, then I would have to trust that and believe in that, you know, and just keep praying about everybody's safety and lace them up and get going. The other thing I'd be considered is, man, I haven't played 5-on-5 basketball in a while. So the other thing I'd be considering is just making sure that I'm physically and emotionally and mentally prepared to go out and perform at a high level, because things are going to kick off pretty fast. You know, they play a few games and then it's bam, right in the playoffs. So it's going to be different.
No doubt about it. And one last thing I'm going to sneak in here, because it's a very important question that we've been discussing and debating here on the show today. Who's got the best fast food fries, Antonio?
The best fast food fries right now. You know, I'm from Oakland, California, in the Bay, and we have, you know, hamburger spots and hot dog spots, and although I don't eat at those much, you know, we have Nation's Hamburgers and Casper's Hot Dogs, so I grew up on that stuff, or In-N-Out Burgers. So I think from my perspective, I would have to say one of, you know, Nation's Hamburgers is one of our best fast food spots. But
okay,
I don't know what everybody else may think of that.
Well,
you know,
Kendrick Perkins just said he wants those Chick-fil-A waffle fries. I thought that was an upset personally. I didn't expect that to be the way he'd go. So
no, I will say this, you know, living in Atlanta as long as I have, those waffle fries are banging. Yeah, I see why he said that. He just should have said, just buy a couple orders of large fries and keep it moving. You know what I mean?
Well, we were arguing that In-N-Out burgers are so great, but their fries are a little weak, so that's how we got on the conversation. You know what I mean?
You got to break that down, man. If you're talking about best burgers, you know, you got a lot of competition out there for best burgers. Then you got to go to fries. You know, you got Five Guys. You got some of these other ones, man. Y'all ask a loaded question when you start talking about that.
Antonio Davis, longtime NBA vet, former NBA Players Association, and, of course, former president, and, of course, former colleague with us here at ESPN. Antonio, it's been too long. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Thank you again for making time for us. Appreciate it.
You too, man. God bless.
All right, take care. There he is, Antonio Davis. All right, quick break, 2 minutes. Coming up next, Keyshawn is being gypped. I'll tell you why in 2 minutes. All right, back here on the Sedano Show, as I promised, in 2 minutes, presented by Progressive Insurance. Shower sessions, part interview, part concert, all from the shower. Grammy winner St. Vincent invites up-and-coming artists to sing, share, and get funky all in the sound booth of their home, the shower. Watch youtube.com/progressive for more videos. All our guests, like Antonio Davis, appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Thanks to him. Thanks to Kendrick Perkins. Both were excellent. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Just guys that can give you the real deal on what's going on behind the scenes with the NBA. Want to thank our friends at Thank You Thursday. You know, this is what we're doing here at the station. They've done a great job. Tommy and that whole marketing crew, and even corporate Greg, and of course, Boss Betty Pantsuits, putting this together. And we're trying to thank our local frontline workers and healthcare workers every Thursday, presented by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. If you want to nominate someone, you can email ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com with the first, last name, city, and occupation. Or you can post a short video on Twitter or Instagram using the hashtag 710 Thank You Thursday. Every Thursday, we'll interview a frontline worker and give them a $500 thank you gift, okay, to help them out. A $200 service to Valvoline Instant Oil Change, a $100 gift card to Wingstop, VSLiquor.com, and Shooteria.com. So, again, the show is presented by Progressive Insurance. And thanks again to our guests earlier. The French fry debate, though, really hot all of a sudden.
You guys are all nuts thinking that McDonald's fries are all that great.
Well, but
they are completely overrated.
I mean, even Antonio Davis and Kendrick Perkins think the waffle fries from Chick-fil-A are better.
Okay, see there, that was a great point by both of them. Those are very, very good. I'll take waffle fries over any other fries.
Really?
And I didn't even think about those. Yeah, waffle fries are delicious.
No, I'm not feeling that.
Curly fries.
Curly fries are good, too.
Yeah,
the waffle fries, just how you eat them, there's a whole like pattern to it. It's great.
Yeah, curly fries. By the way, I want to ask something just kind of off. I want to get to Keyshawn being gypped and Greg being angry about Major League Baseball here in a second. We'll do that here before we're done with the show. But I here's what I've noticed recently. Greg, Laura, actually, I'll ask Laura because, Greg, you have terrible fashion sense. Laura.
I agree. I'm not going to even argue that.
Okay,
absolutely.
Laura, have you noticed that young men are into the short shorts again?
Yeah, no. I understand. I have a friend who's really into that right now. We actually were talking about it like 2 days ago. He goes, my legs are great. I work out. I want to show them off. I don't understand that.
Yeah, because I've seen a lot of young athletes, both in football and basketball, both in college and pro, that are rocking the short shorts. Like, I'm talking old school John Stockton level short shorts. And I am just surprised at how this is going. Like, I own a pair of shorts that are like kind of like that, but I only wear them in the house, right? Because I don't want to be in my chones here with the, you know, when like, if someone arrives at my doorstep. You know what I'm saying? But that's just for comfort. But I never would wear that out on the street anywhere. But that has made like a huge comeback.
Yeah, my friend said it's a thing right now. He goes, men are wearing it. So I agree. I just don't understand it. I personally, to me, short shorts are for women. Sorry, guys. It's just my thing. And rock them at home. Like you said, it's a comfort thing. You want to keep them? Cool. But for me as a man, I don't want to see you guys in short shorts. Like,
all right.
No.
877-710-ESPN. Somebody explain the hyper short shorts to me for dudes right now. The young guys are rocking. Young guys, if you're out there, tell me why you're rocking it. Like, I'm not mad at you. I'm just curious. You know what I mean? Just like I said earlier, we are here to have an open dialogue. Sometimes it's very serious. Other times, not so serious. Short shorts are very not serious, but I am genuinely curious. Like, we know, Greg, you ain't going to wear no short shorts. You're probably still wearing cargo shorts.
Oh, no. See, that is one thing I will not do. I do not wear cargo shorts. Those do not fit. Those do not work anymore. I won't wear the short shorts either. And Laura, you're talking about wear them at home to be comfortable. Short shorts are not comfortable.
No, but if they're like short shorts, no, they're not tight. Not tight there. You know what I'm saying? Like, short shorts just based on where they finish on your leg.
No, that's what I mean. Yeah, that's what I mean. That means they're usually short and they're tight around your leg at the same time usually. So, no, I'm not wearing any. I mean, you don't see baggy short shorts. That just doesn't happen.
There is. And I think you need to work out a little bit more, Greg. I think if they're that tight, I mean, that's a whole
lot. Well, I need to work out, period, but that's not part of the question.
Let me hear from Gelato Drew on this. Gelato Drew, what do you got?
Yo, Ale, Jorge, above the knee gang, baby. I'm 36. I got great legs. So I'm gonna rock the short set with like some satin. Like, if you got dope short sets, like some silk or some satin ones, hell yeah, it's fly. Oh. with your shirt buttoned up, opened a little, okay. A nice Cuban with the hat. You just have to have the look. You got to be able to pull it off.
Yeah, I mean it. I don't know if I can rock that at 42. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like I can rock a lot of things still. That's just not one of them, Gelato Drew.
Bobby, you're from Miami. You should be. You got it, baby. You just put a little gold chain on. You know you got it still, Jorge. Stop it. No mames.
All right. No mames. Okay, wait.
See.
All right. See ya. Gelato Drew. David in Huntington Beach. David, are you rocking the short shorts right now?
No, definitely not, man. My shorts are close to my knees, man.
Okay.
No way. And the best French fries, Nathan's in Coney Island.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this, though. But you've seen the young fellas rocking the short shorts, right? Like, you've seen this. It's a thing now.
Yeah. I'm just trying to do peace, love, and happiness and not talk about people and their personal decisions that I don't agree with, man. I'm just saying.
All right, David, be good, man. Take care. I don't love Nathan's fries, the crinkly fries. They're fine. They're not my favorite, though. All right, Bergman, I'm on the other side. I'm going to let you rail against Rob Manfred. I'm going to let you just get angry, okay?
Ooh.
And then I'm also going to tell you why college football is jipping Keyshawn. Like, they are not respecting him. So we'll do that. We are back in 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Don't forget, tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast with our friend Mina Kimes, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review the ESPN Daily wherever you enjoy your podcast. And we are done reading stuff today. All right, let's talk. Bergman, You hate Rob Manfred. Go, go. Just yell. Just scream. Tell me why you hate him.
So I was reading an article from Ken Rosenthal in The Athletic today, and it's titled "Manfred Must Strike a Deal with the Players or Ruin His Legacy." And before I actually got into the article itself, what legacy does this guy actually have? His legacy so far that I've seen is that he has screwed up completely what happened with the Astros cheating scandal, and which then obviously went over to the Red Sox and now possibly even the Yankees. That's all going to be screwed up now because the players got no hit whatsoever. He screwed up these negotiations. He was balking at things. He was giving the players these terrible, terrible deals that were the exact same deal over and over again and expecting them to be like, okay, yeah, sure. Then he said, all right, fine. We're not going to give you any more. But we're not going to talk to you anymore. And then the players came back and said, all right, fine, we won't talk anymore either, and let's just go ahead and have a season. He's like, oh, wait, you're going to sue me, so now I'm gonna hold off now.
Yeah, I mean, the suing part is pretty ridiculous.
Right, but he's just been an absolute joke the entire way through. He's not growing the sport in any sense. He's actually ruining the sport. He's changing rules that really some of them are okay, but most of them don't really need to be changed. The fact of the matter is that in this season right now, as of right now, we could have been playing baseball. There could have been baseball being played at this moment, and they would have been the only sport on TV, and you would have been sitting around with your kids and watching and growing the game from a younger audience that you are not doing now instead, because you're fighting over money and trying to play a game with the players, and it's just absolutely nonsense. Everything that he has touched in Major League Baseball has been the wrong decision. I have zero trust in him, and it's just complete waste of time, anything that he has to do.
You know, like how they say there's always a pot of gold at the end of a rainbow? I feel like at the end of this rainbow, there's like a pot of poop.
That's a perfect way to put it. And I think I'm with Laura and was with me too. If Rob Manfred is still the commissioner and there is no baseball this year, you've lost fans. You've lost me as a fan. You've lost Laura as a fan. And I think you too, George.
Oh, I mean, I'm out. I've told you. Like, if they lose this season, like, I will – eventually when they come back, like, we'll talk Dodgers because we – you know, it's part of the job. So I'm – you know, I'm a professional. But outside of that, like, I'm not watching anything else. Like, I don't – I'm only going to watch what's necessary for the show. And, you know, being prepared to do the show is the only thing that I'm going to be worried about at that time. And you're right. Like, I ultimately, look, Rob Manfred has shown to be completely in over his head. Like, I don't think there's any question about it. And anyone who wants to sit here and argue that, oh, well, you know, it's okay. They've had labor strife before 1994, 1980, whatever. This is a lot different because here's the thing. We're living during a pandemic, number one. Let's start that. Okay, let's start there. Second of all, the other part of the equation is this, is that there could be real labor strife, as you mentioned, because the players understand they not only have the moral high ground now, they've recaptured that after relinquishing it early on, they have the legal high ground. So if I'm the players, I'm fighting them tooth and nail at this point because they've put themselves in this particular position, the owners, that is. So yeah, this could end up dragging out in the courts and in arbitration hearings and things, which means it could delay upcoming seasons even beyond this one.
Yeah, the CBA, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, comes up next year, and the players have every right to be doing everything that they're doing. And we're not going to start our season next year on time if that's what happens. And the whole thing, it just blows up in baseball's face. And it's to the point now, the public perception of baseball is, oh man, they're just going to mess that up no matter what anyway. So it's just baseball being baseball, which destroys the sport. No longer America's pastime.
Yeah. We have a lot of people who are also destroying the notion that short shorts are not a problem. You know, apparently, you know, Mark Cates, one of our top sales guys here, is saying he rocks the short shorts when he goes on runs. He says that Bergman looks like a Capri guy. Is that true, Bergman? Are you a Capri guy?
No, I will not wear Capris. It's a little weird for me. But when I was a runner, short shorts is the right way to go on a run.
Yeah.
You don't want
because you don't get chafing that way, or less chafing potentially, right?
Correct. So I'm with you, Mark Cates, when it comes to the running.
Yeah. Laura, you have friends who are sending you texts and gifts and all sorts of stuff about their short shorts. Dudes want to show their legs off.
Yeah, he goes, don't kill my vibe. I got legs. Let me show them. I was like, no.
I wish I had Kendrick and Antonio back on because they did not play in the short short era. And I would be curious to see how they would feel about the short shorts rocking a comeback here, both in the NBA and amongst football players. Like, it really is a thing. Like, OBJ, I was watching a video. OBJ and Odell Beckham and Cam Newton were working out at UCLA. Did you know that, Greg, that they were working out at UCLA recently?
No, I had no idea.
Yeah, they were working out at UCLA over the weekend. And, OBJ rocks the short shorts all day. And so does Cam. So it was this is a real comeback. It is a real thing. Big-time players in big-time sports are rocking the short shorts. It has opened up. This isn't a new thing. It seems like it's been a couple of years, and now the general public is going back on this. It's something we're going to need to discuss a little further tomorrow. By the way, speaking of something we may need to discuss a little further tomorrow that I didn't bring up enough here, is I had a lot of thoughts on stuff going on in college football, including Mike Gundy, who's a dope. I'll just say that, right? Like, if you want to really want me to surmise how I feel about Mike Gundy, the Oklahoma State coach, he's an idiot, a bleeping idiot. How about that? Second of all, because, by the way, this isn't about one T-shirt that he's worn about some random news outlet that is a conspiracy theory outlet. It's about him telling black players, and you can read it in USA Today, if they don't play up to snuff, that he will, quote unquote, send them back to the hood. Go read what Mike Gundy has said to other players and what players have said about him recently in the USA Today article by Dan Woken. And lastly, the College Football Hall of Fame needs to respect our friend Keyshawn Johnson. The fact that he is a two-time All-American, Rose Bowl and Cotton Bowl MVP, number one pick in the NFL draft, and is not in the College Football Hall of Fame is utterly absurd. He has a Rose Bowl record, 12 catches, 216 yards, and he was on the show Coach. How dare you, College Football Hall of Fame? I got in trouble a couple years ago for flooding your lines because they need to get Keyshawn in. I'm not telling you to do that because I don't want to get in trouble, but if you do it on your own, that's on you. Thanks to Greg. Thanks to Laura. Thanks to Kendrick Perkins. Thanks to you guys for calling in. Thanks to Antonio Davis. We love you. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10. See ya.